Bettering your business takes working with the best. With the James Hardie Alliance, you gain access to leads, training, networking, and support from the number one brand of siding in North America. Achieve new levels of success by joining the James Hardie Alliance today.
94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. This is the Electric Drum. I'm Jose Candelario here, joined by Pastor Valerie Washington. Let me get, I said pastory. I put it all together.
Yes.
Welcome. Tell me a little bit about where you grew up and who do you grow up with?
So I was born and raised in New Haven, Connecticut, September 1st, 1968.
Come on. Black don't crack, so stop aging yourself.
Yeah.
We'll keep it there, 19-something.
Mm-hmm. And so I was born to Rosa and John McCarter, who migrated here from the South. And I have five siblings, and we're all born and raised, grew up in the same house. And so I went to Sheridan School.
Before we continue, we got to give shout outs to your parents. Your father's name is?
Johnny Ray McCarter.
And he is from?
He was from North Carolina, and then he moved here. My grandmother moved him here.
Okay.
And he was a chef. He passed away. He was a chef. He owned his own catering business, A to Z Catering. And my mom, Rosa, she's a Spears, but she's McCarter through marriage. Rosa McCarter. And she was in banking over 30 years. She retired. And she's with me now, working with me at one of our businesses. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your dad. Was there anything you remember from him?
So he just died maybe 10 years ago. We were raised up in our family. We were born in the projects, and then what he did was he saved his money up. He was working at the Colonial on Whaley Avenue. It was a restaurant years ago, and then he was working at the hotel on Whaley, which was Holiday Inn back in the day. He saved his money up, moved us out Westville, bought us a house, and we grew up in the house, and he taught us really how to eat with class. We would all sit down as little kids. We had to have the knife, the fork, the napkin on the lap. He would have candle lit, and he would have dinner music playing. And that's how he raised us. And, he's always been in our life up until he passed. And my mom, we're always together. He was a great supporter of what we did.
Do you remember any nice little story about him, you know, was he a disciplinarian?
I was just about to say that he would whip us, yeah. But he didn't whip us as much as my mom did. But, yeah, so he was really big on making sure that we didn't have the struggle that he had, right? He was big on us graduating from high school. And once I got into church and became a pastor, he was very, very supportive. He would drive the van for us, the church van, come and clean the church. Anything we needed, he was there to make sure that, you know, as his daughters, I have four sisters and one brother. He was there for all of us, making sure everybody had homes and support everybody to have a vehicle. Whatever everybody wanted to do, he supported it. And the funny thing is, he didn't just support us, but he supported everybody in the community. No matter what people needed, he was always giving. And when I was growing up, I was like, he's always giving our money away, which was his money. And so now that I'm older, a lot of the things that he did, it reminds me so much of why I am the way I am today. Right. And so he was a big supporter of family and community. And so, yeah.
Having that example and foundation does you know, solidify a part of who you are. Tell me a little bit about moms.
So my mom, she's been in bank. So actually, my mom and dad have been together since they were like 13. Yeah. My mom moved in. Her mom passed when she was young. She's from the Carolinas. She moved in with my dad. She was very young. And my grandmother kind of raised her, raised them to be together. You know, growing up as little kids, they were young, but I remember them fighting a lot and arguing and my mom taking us to go live with my grandmother, you know, all that stuff. And so growing up, I don't remember my mom working when we were younger, but as time began to progress and we were getting a little older, maybe in middle school, I remember my mom working at People's Bank. And then also she worked at the credit bureau. And she got me a job working there when I was in high school. Of course, I messed that up and got fired. So my mom, she was big on, you know, raising us up as her daughters and keeping us together and working very hard and cooking, you know, for us. We always had to sit at the table. Like, nobody was able to go in the rooms. And we always had to sit at the table and eat together. Let me think what else. We always went on trips together yearly. My parents would take us on a trip. I don't know if you remember Riverside back in the day.
Agua, Massachusetts. Yes, Riverside now, Six Flags. Yep.
Absolutely. We would go down south. At the time, my grandmother moved back down south. So we would go down and stay the summers with my grandmother while my parents worked here, like I said, and they worked very hard to get us out of the projects and into our own home. And currently, my mom's still there in that same house. She actually paid it off and, you know, enjoying her best life. And so we have a very close relationship with our mom today. So her and my dad were really close, you know?
It's good to see, and you describe your parents' relationship in their early years as very tumultuous, because relationships are just like, you know, they grow through phases, right?
Right, right.
Especially if you're young and you're under, I mean, for them to have survived their relationship, in, you know, developing as human beings, already being engaged with someone else or, you know, in a relationship, that's pretty big.
Yeah.
Can you, does that example of resilience, you know, really stuck to with you, or do you think about that?
Yes, I do. So my siblings and I, we're very close. Like every holiday, we have to come together. Every holiday, we all have to come together. The kids have to come together. We go on vacations together, all of us. Like we all went to Florida. My mom, my sister, their husbands, the kids, grandkids. We all went to Florida to visit my grandbaby. And we all went to South Carolina this summer. We went camping together. So even though we're all older, I'm closer to the youngest. We all still, we work together, right? So we do everything together. Birthdays, we all come together. For Christmas, we're looking to get a big Airbnb somewhere in Connecticut where we can all come together. So one thing my father was big on was growing up, we argue, fight, but we all had to come together for holidays. We don't care if we weren't talking. We had to come together for the holidays. So now that we're older, we learn, you know, we don't argue anymore. We're over all of that. So, but we come together and it's good. And our children do the same. So if the kids have something, they all get together. We won't go. So yeah, it's like a family thing where we all just come together and we're very supportive and we help one another. Yeah.
To see that and know that in your household and to see that development is very important. Your mother, as a banker, as a professional woman, what kind of influence did that have over you?
Oh, my God. So I learned everything financially from my mom. So, you know, when I was younger, I left home, wanted to hang out with my friends. So I left home on my own and struggled very hard. Right. And so because I didn't want to follow their laws. And so once I wind up, you know, getting my life together, getting my life back into the church, me and my mom became very close. So when my dad passed, I brought her to stay with me. She stayed with me and for some months. And then she went back home. But during that time she was with me, she taught me everything about banking, like everything. Like, I'm debt free. I don't owe anything. Just, you know, my normal mortgage, light, gas, those things. I'm debt free. She taught me how to do business. So through working with her, I learned how to sit down and do all the paperwork myself for us to get the church. We purchased a shelter. So she taught me all of that. So I learned firsthand purchasing my own home. She taught me everything. So now I'm like, let's just do it. Let's just do it, you know, because she's 78 now. So now I bring her along with me. When I handle banking, but big transactions, big deals, but actually I just bring her along because she did teach me and train me, and she trained me well. So I know somewhat how to do basically what we need to do to get whatever this property we need to get. Yeah, she taught me all of it: profit and loss, having insurance on the buildings, like taxes, tax exempt. She taught me everything. Yeah.
You're listening to the Electric Drummer 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario. This is Pastor Valerie Washington. One thing that I noticed in these stories is that they did the hard work. There was no cutting corners. Do you still Do you try to cut corners, or do you, you know, you hear your dad in the back of your mind, do this the right way?
I'm scared to cut corners. I'm scared to cut corners because I've seen so many people make mistakes, and my parents never taught me to cut corners. So I don't want to have to cut corners and pay a penalty later. So, and then I hear the Lord saying, don't do it. Right. And so, like I said, I've seen my parents do everything legitimate. So I never think about cutting corners, you know, because I feel like if I do it right the first time, I won't have to go back and do it over again. I'm big on, I like to just get it right and then we can keep moving forward. So, and I don't want to cut corners. You know, I really don't want to cut corners because you pay a price. And I'm already paying a price, right? To get to where, you know, to do what I do, I'm already paying a price to do it. So I don't want to pay an extra price that I don't have to pay, right? And I want to be able to sleep at night and not have to worry about somebody coming down the road saying you didn't do this or you didn't do that.
Yeah. Turn the mic a little bit. Yeah, perfect. Because now, yeah, we in line of sight. Perfect. So tell me a little bit about your education and what led you to become a pastor? Because it sounded like you were a pastor at a young age.
So,
we hit the streets a little bit.
Yeah.
We was outside.
We was outside.
What drew you back inside? Was that that foundation? Was it a situation?
So I come from a history of family that's born and raised in church. A lot of my family were pastors growing up. My grandmother's been in church all my life. And so, yes, I was outside, but I did go to nursing school to become a CNA. I did go to hairdressing school, real estate school, and didn't do any of those things. And so I always knew one day that I would be back with the Lord. I always knew that, right? And so I would always, you know, enjoy drinking a little, and I would always be drinking and with my friends and saying, you know, the Lord's going to save me one day, and when he does, I'm just going to go. I would always have those conversations, you know, and so I knew one day he would call me back, and when he did, I was at a funeral, and I heard the preacher say, it sound like, because I was under the influence, and it sound like he said the Lord was coming at night. So I said, well, if the Lord is coming tonight, I got to get ready, you know, for the Lord to come. So I said, Lord, if you let me make it home, I promise I'm going to repent. I'm going to return. So when I got home, I was like, oh, God, I'm so sorry. I was crying and everything. I was like, I'm sorry. I really thought the preacher said the Lord was coming at night. So that night I was in my bathroom. I was crying out to the Lord, and I called my mom 12 o'clock that night. And this was in 1992. And I said to my mom, I just gave my life to the Lord. And she walked me through like the sinner's prayer. And since 1992, I've given my life to the Lord. And I tell you, it's been a journey. It's been a long journey. But I must say, it's a great journey with God. I would never trade it for anything in the world.
Early on in our journey, especially through the church, we take on all types of positions in the church.
Yeah.
What were some of those early positions that you took?
So I was a youth leader, and I became a youth pastor. I was a missionary. I became an evangelist. And from an evangelist, I became a pastor in 2002, I became a pastor. And in 2019, I was consecrated to the office of an apostle. And what that is I oversee other churches.
Hmm.
Yeah. So the most that I loved the most was working with the youth and an evangelist. Those are my favorites.
Why?
Working with kids. I love kids. I just love working with kids.
What did you learn?
Working with kids.
Yeah.
Kids keep me alive. They're loving. They argue, but guess what? They're right back playing with each other. They don't hold any grudges. They forgive so easy. They can forget. Like they don't hold on to anything. And honestly, when I see them, just the love that you get from them is so different. You know what I'm saying? It's so different. And when I talk to them, they really listen. Like I'm really important, and what I have to say means a whole lot. Like they're like locked in. I love the energy. I love you know, I love working with them, talking with them, you know. I just love the kids. And the evangelism part I like that part because as an evangelist, our church, we've been outside for years, going into different communities, talking to people, you know, seeing what the needs of the community are. That's a part of what I would do as an evangelist, go out and see what people's needs were. If families needed prayer, people needed prayer on the streets, I would stop and pray. I love it. I love it. Yeah.
One thing that is consistent in through all this is attention.
Mm-hmm.
People need just a little bit of attention and you can just see that sparks a change in their life. Can you give me a little testimony about that?
So, as you know, in the city of New Haven, we experience a lot of people that we come into contact with, a lot of people that have trauma, suffer from trauma, mental health, substance use. And so those are the people that I really like to target because there's always a story behind what we see people actually going through. And so when I sit and I listen to people's stories on the street, I kind of try, because I'm always trying to get to that problem. Like, what happened? How did you get here, right? And once they start to tell that story, it kind of just helps you to be able to understand them a little better and to, you know, just sympathize with them and just be able to try to help the person, right? Aside of whatever we see them doing, whether, like I had a young kid the other day was telling me that he has a warrant and his mom died. He's on drugs because the aunt turned him out. Like this whole thing. But he wants to work. He wants to, you know, be a father to his children. And he was just breaking down. And for that, for me, it's like listening and hearing that. It, when you listen to people, I'm telling you, they start crying all the time. And I think it's because they know that I really care. I'm not just, there's no money involved. I just really care. And I really want to help them. You know,
I want to go back to you when you became a pastor in 2002. You said we all have our first sermon, our first word that comes to us. Mm-hmm. How was that experience for you? Were you nervous to deliver, or did it just come to you naturally? And what kind of are you a writer?
I'm still nervous. I'm still nervous. Right after all these years, I'm still nervous. Yeah, I'm very nervous when I get up.
What was that first sermon like?
So the first time I ever spoke was, I remember Matthew 6:33. I talked about, it says, Matthew 6:33. It says, I'm about to say, for God so loved the world. Matthew 6:33, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness and all things will be added unto you. So my first sermon was about, you know, spending time with the Lord, going after God, and he will supply all of your needs. So at the time I was single, and I remember I said, so if I needed a husband, God would have gave me one. I remember saying that up there. I said, so guess what? I'm not in need. So that's my first sermon I remember. That was my first sermon.
Wow. And you still get nervous.
Yeah.
Is that a good thing?
Yeah, because some people know what to say. I never know what I'm going to say. I start praying in advance, like, God, you got to give me what to say. You got to give me what to say. I don't know what to say. But once I get talking, then I start flowing, right? It's like the spirit kicks in, and that's it. I'm like, all right, guys, I got to stop. Because once I'm in it, that's it. So, yeah. But at first, the first maybe 5 or 10 minutes, oh, yeah. I'm like, okay, I'm all over the place. Help me. Yeah.
Can we say, young black men, don't be afraid of a strong black woman?
So, right. And I've had some two Caucasian women say to me recently, you know, you're a strong black woman. And so my dad raised us to be strong women, to be strong and independent, right? And he would always say, don't be out here running around with these guys and they can't take care of you. They can't. He's a mama's boy. You don't need to be out here doing that. Don't take no wooden nickels. That was his favorite. Don't take no wooden nickels. And he would say, if you're going to be out all night, don't come home and ask me for anything. So he raised us to be independent and to be strong. And we learned that from our mom, too. Like, so even though my mom worked, once we started getting older, like she was able to keep her own money and he would pay all the bills. So, but he taught us to be independent. To not have to depend on a man, to be able to learn how to take care of ourselves and our own responsibilities. And so I'm just learning within the last 2 years how to really let my husband do what he needs to do, because I'm like hands on. Like, you're just moving a little like molasses. I got it. So I'm just learning in the last 2 years to just be like, okay, go ahead. Yeah.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario, and this is Valerie Washington, Upon the Rock Ministries.
Yes.
This thing is like, it's got many arms now. One of them is the homeless shelter that you've taken over.
Yes.
Big deal, because that was we're talking about the once Emmanuel Baptist, right? Mm-hmm. Shelter on Grand Avenue.
Yes.
How was that process for you, and how is it going so far?
So we started doing warming center out of our church, the lower level of our church in our dining hall. And we had to move out. We were doing it for a whole winter season, when they would come in 7 p.m. at night and leave out at 7 a.m. in the morning. And so we had to move them out. By April 15th, they would have to leave anyway, but the fire department was saying it wasn't good for them to be in the lower level because everybody couldn't get up the stairs quick enough in case of a fire. Mm-hmm. So the city gave us a school, and we used a school last winter before last. And then the thing for me was everybody having to get up in the morning to go out in the cold. Mm-hmm. Right. And then not being able to help them during the day with the resources, because remember, at 7 o'clock at night, everything is closed. So we couldn't really provide the services that we really wanted to really help them. And so we've always fed people that were we've always fed Mira Cash, people that experienced homelessness on Whaley Avenue, by cooking pots of soup for over 10 years. We've always distributed food. We have a food bank on Edgewood Avenue, so we've always given out food. And so at this time, last year, a year ago, myself and one of our parishioners, Robin, we were looking for a building to move our childcare into. And so we sat down and we talked to someone from economic development in the city of New Haven, and we were talking about a building, and they were like, well, did you see 645? It's a shelter. And it's up for sale. So we looked and we was like, oh, really? And so the price was like, oh, my gosh. Okay. I don't know if we're going to be able to do that. So we actually met with the owners. And the amazing thing is we got it for $100,000 less. Yes. So the city bid it. And developers from New York came in with cash. And God bless us, we got it for $100,000 less. They gave it to us for $100,000 less. So we renovated the entire building. We purchased it and renovated it, the entire building. And we currently house 75 men, and we provide wraparound services for them. The Fairhaven Clinic, they have a space in there. There are ARPN is there, the nurse, and she takes care of all of their medical needs. Fairhaven Clinic is down the street, so... you know, they bring medicine for our clients, harm reduction. They provide harm reduction services for our clients. We help them get jobs. Those that have the Husky card, we help them to get back into school. We help them get apartments. And for those that cannot afford housing on their own, we kind of partner them together to kind of room together with in an apartment. And that's what we do. We provide wraparound services.
And one of the interesting things you said, that you will accept a walk-in, because a lot of
We
don't accept walk-ins. No. That's the system right now. You have to go through 211.
Yeah.
And then they have to refer them to you. So right. There's no longer a walk-in shelter.
No.
That doesn't exist anymore. Oh.
Well, not with us. I know the warming centers are walk-in.
Okay.
The warming centers are definitely walk-in. Varick has a warming center, 180 Center. Has a walk-in.
Okay.
Right? They walk in.
But those are warming centers.
They're only through the winter months.
Okay. And then, yeah, because as soon as it gets really cold, they open up.
Right.
Other services that you have, you do have child care, right?
Right. So we have an academy. We started that during COVID, right? Parents had to go to work. Mm-hmm. So myself, Robin, a few of us, I said to Robin and my nephew Chaz, I said, why don't we, you know, convert the sanctuary into a classroom so that parents can continue to go to work and we'll just keep, you know, their kids. And at that time, we were making like $175 in a week. And we were open like 6 o'clock in the morning to 5 o'clock in the evening, charging each parent $35 a week per kid, cooking hot breakfast and hot lunch. And then we found out that we needed to be licensed. And so, like, all of it just happened all of a sudden. So, Sarah Miller, she helped us to get licensed, and we got licensed, and then it started growing. Like, this was not on our radar. It started growing, and we became a licensed child care center, and now we are an academy, and we homeschool kids, and we have 32 children. The school bus drops them off in the morning. Some of the kids pick them up in the afternoon, where we tutor them with New Haven Reads. We've done partnerships with the Board of Ed, and all of our children that were below level in their reading are now above level. Hmm. Yeah, and so we homeschool, I want to say about, okay, so we homeschool 8 kids so far. Yeah.
And they take the tests and everything so they can be on par with their grading?
So we have to work within the system to be able to make sure that when it's time for them to graduate, that they're able to graduate. And so because it's grown so much, because in the summertime, we're open and we take a lot of kids in the summer. And so we've grown so much. So we just literally, we've been in our sanctuary from 2019 up until this June. We just moved out.
Wow.
So every Sunday, we would have to take all the church equipment.
Mm-hmm.
We've been doing it for years, packing it all up, converting it into a child care.
Wow. Well, now you have your own space.
Now we have our, and it's so beautiful. Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about the food bank.
Okay.
Where is it located? What are the hours?
The food bank is located on Edgewood Avenue in the police substation. I can't remember the address. But if they call 211, they will let them know it's on Edgewood Avenue, the police substation.
Right by the school.
It's 1.
It's okay. You can talk Robin.
130 Edgewood Avenue.
130 Edgewood Avenue. You can talk Robin. Robin's in the building right now.
Yes.
The super assistant.
Yeah.
The other half of the brain, which is good. It's good to have. Yes,
absolutely. So it's 130 Edgewood Avenue. We were doing every third Saturday. Now we're every third and fourth Saturday.
Third and fourth Saturday. Now I want to talk a little bit about the growth in need. Have you seen a growth in need, especially in the past year? And how has that affected your ability to distribute food?
It really hasn't affected our ability, thank God. So what we've done is we do Connecticut Food Cheer, but God has blessed us to also partner with Midwest Food Bank. I don't know if you're aware with Midwest, they are extremely large. So between the two, combining the two, you know, we are able to meet the needs of our community. We've seen an increase, of course, because of lack of food stamps, but we have been able to, you know.
But on your end, you're being able to supply, but you have seen an increase of need.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Also, in the Fairhaven section where we are, one of the community partners are giving out $75 gift cards, which is a help too, so they can get food from us and then also go down there and get a gift card. But since like this month, it's really been an increase. Yeah.
Oh, this month you can already feel it with SNAP benefits and whatnot being in danger. Is this a referral base?
Anybody can go.
Anyone can go. Third and fourth
Saturday,
1:30 Edgewood Avenue. See, look at that, Robin. Am I good, Robin? Huh?
Absolutely. 8 a.m.
8 a.m. Okay, that's good to know.
8 a.m.
Good to know. First come, first serve. But of course, thank God that you do have an abundance right now and able to serve everyone in our community. Let's get to this event. You got an event coming up. We're almost done here. We talked done about everything.
Right.
What is the name of the event?
The Faith Convention.
The Faith Convention.
Yes. So the Faith Convention is December 5th, 6th, and 7th.
December 5th, 6th, and 7th.
At Career High School.
At Career Hill Regional, yes.
Yes, in the great city of New Haven, Connecticut.
And we start at what time?
It's starting each night. Doors open at 5, event starts at 6.
All right. Now, and what kind of event is this?
So it's something that the Lord gave me during COVID. Churches were closed. So during 2019, it was our first year. I was laying in the bed and I was like, what can we do to inspire people, to encourage them? Because they were going through so much. So he gave me the Faith Convention. So each night we'll have a preacher preach. We'll give away $1,000 each. The first night we gave away $2,000 the first year each night. And we give away flat screen TVs, 65 inch, and laptops. And we also give away, we were giving away cars. Right? So we gave away, how many cars did we give away so far, Robin? About 11 cars. we've been giving away with the, this is our fifth year. And so it was all to get people to put their faith back in God, right? Because churches were closed. You know, people were just lost, discouraged. And so we figured those gifts would get them in the door for them to hear the message, to be encouraged. And all our vendors are free. We give away free snacks, free food, brand new, whatever we have new, free coats, free boots, sneakers, whatever we get donated, we give it away free. Everything's free, right? Nobody has to pay anything. You just come in the door. Wow. So this year we're giving away $5,000 towards a down payment for a house. And we are in collaboration with Neighborhood Housing, Livable City Initiative, and Liberty Bank, right? And so we're pulling all these resources together. And by the time, as long as the participant qualifies, they should be close to $60,000 for a down payment for a house.
The name of the festival again is?
The Faith Convention. I had to
think. Faith Convention. Because you got a million things going on. Faith Convention, December 5th, 6th, and 7th. We're starting, open doors open at 5:30, yes. 6 o'clock?
5 o'clock.
5 o'clock, mm-hmm. Doors open, Hill Regional right here in New Haven, December 5th, 6th, and 7th, okay? Yes. Doors open at 5 for those, and this is the Faith Convention. We're talking to Pastor Valerie Washington here on the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario, flexing my mental skills in front of the good pastor because this lady is super talented. This is the final minutes of our conversation. What is your message to the community?
So first, I just want to say they can look at our website, utrm.org, for any of the resources we just shared. One of the things I want to say to our community is we are a church. And so I believe if there's a need somewhere, it can be provided for. So if we don't have it, I always say, give us a moment, we'll find it, right? So that nobody should be left undone. Nobody should be, there should never be a need that's not, we're not able to provide it in some way, right? Whether it's within or without, right? And so, yeah, that's what I want to say. We're here for our community. I love our community. And I always say the great city of New Haven, because New Haven has a lot of resources and help for people. But my last thing I want to say is I cannot do none of this that I do without Christ, because it's his vision and the great people that he has given me to support the vision. And that's Upon This Rock Ministries. God has blessed me with willing workers and loving laity. They are the hands and feet that help me to carry out his vision.
And on a personal level, I would like to thank Vanessa Augustine, my first cousin.
Yes.
Because New Haven is only but so big, and everyone right. really knows each other. We're all family one way or another. We're all connected.
Right.
And so thank you, Vanessa, for making this connection and making this conversation possible.
Yes.
Ms. Valerie Washington, we're going to have to bring you back every holiday season just to have a conversation about what it takes to make it happen and what it takes to stay faithful, because that's a good conversation that we need to have. Yes. With that said, this has been the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario. This has been Pastor Valerie Washington, in the great words, Upon the Rock Ministries, urtm.org. All right.
You got it.
For more information, Faith Convention happened December 5th, 6th, and 7th, starting at 5 p.m. at Hill Regional. Please stop by. Lots of goodies, up to a $5,000 down payment for a home if you qualify.
If you
qualify. This is not free cash money, y'all.
Right.
If you qualify.
Right.
But there'll be tons of giveaways of coats and things and necessary while supplies last. So please stay tuned. And with that said, like I always say, thank you for listening.
Hi there, we are James and Dan, two forts of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favorite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.